We are holding on Kofir Dalet Omar Aleph, second line. We talked yesterday about the concept of Masadrin L'Baal Chayv. When we have, when a Baal Chayv has, when a Loiva has defaulted, he doesn't have what to, he's not paying, we take away basically everything that he has, we leave him certain basic necessities of life. So we discussed that yesterday in connection with Erchin and in connection with a Baal Chayv. But now we're going to revisit that. Do we make this arrangement when it comes to a Baal Chayv? Now, we had yesterday a Braisa that says that we do. One angle on the question is, do we in fact hold that Braisa is valid b'halacha or not? Now, there's also, we talked about yesterday in connection with the Mishnah, that we have Rashi versus Rebbe Natan, different understandings of what was our Mishnah talking about. Was our Mishnah, when it talked about the various dinim involving a mashkin and having to return it, and you or according to the Shimon Gamliel, selling it after 30 days, according to Rashi, that was the issue of Masadrin L'Baal Chayv. Where Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that in Masadrin, that whatever we took from him to pay it off, we give him 30 days. If he doesn't pay off, then we go and sell it, so we don't leave him anything necessarily. Whereas according to the Tanakhama, we say Masadrin L'Baal Chayv, we do leave him certain basic necessities. According to Reb Natan, in Tosfos, those are two different issues. The Mishnah is talking about the dinim of a mashkin that's not taken for the purpose of payment, but rather for the purpose of guaranteeing the payment, so the guy will want his thing back or whatever. There's a different issue with Masadrin L'Baal Chayv, which is what we're going to deal with over here. So here we're dealing definitely with Masadrin L'Baal Chayv. The question of when we're taking everything that he has, do we leave him anything? So, do we do that by a Baal Chayv? Now, we know as a given that we do it by Erchin. So the question is whether we learn one from the other. Mi goma micha micha me Erchin oiloi. Do we learn Xera Shava of the word micha, or the Shurish micha rather, that it says by Baal Chayv versus by Erchin, that whatever applies to one applies to the other? Namely, by Erchin, the Torah tells us, we talked yesterday about Erchin, if you don't have enough money to pay off the Erech, and the Torah tells us, if he's too poor to pay off his Erech, then we go and figure out the value of what he has, and the Hekdish takes that amount, as long as it's at least a Sela, then that's it, he's potter from the rest. Mach hu means he is poor. Mach means poor. Memchaf means poor. So we learn first of all from the fact that the pasuk says that you evaluate and see how much he has, and second of all the fact that you leave him the basic necessities. We learn from the fact that the Torah says he mach hu implies there has to be something of what he needs for his life to be able to go on that has to be left to him. Next, by a Baal Chayv, by a malva and a loiva, you have a pasuk that says that if your brother is poor, and his power is falling by you, then you should uphold him, and you should lend him money, etc. So we see that there's a concept of micha when it comes to lending money as well. So do we use
Yamuch
it?
Means mach?
Yamuch means, it's the same shurish as mach, yeah, poor.
It's the same shurish,
yeah, but that's what it means. It means he becomes poor. He becomes poor.
He's in a way of becoming poor.
Okay, but still, it's the same word anyway. Okay. So, do we learn that Zera Shava mi gama micha micha me Erchin eloi? Do we learn it from Erchin, in which case, yes, we have to be Masadrin L'Baal Chayv, or not, in which case, maybe not? Tashma, the Shalach Ravin be'idrote. So, we can learn from the fact that Ravin sent a letter saying as follows, Dover ze sha'alti l'chol rabbi tsevelei omrili. I ask this by all my rabbeim, whether we learn this Zera Shava or not. And they didn't tell me anything one way or the other. Bram, kachoyz ha-sheila. However, you should know there was another question that was asked in the Bais Medrash that's related to this, from which we can deduce the answer to this one. Namely, they asked in the Bais Medrash as follows, ha'oyma harele monela bedek abayis. What if you have a different case of hekdish? Up till now, we were talking about hekdish in terms of erchin. You say erki olai or erch pleni olai or what have you. Now you have a different case where you just say, I promise to give a money to the Bedek Abayis. Erchin also go to the Bedek Abayis, fine. But the difference is, Erchin, the Torah tells us the specific idea that the imachu me'erchecha, then you put him in front of the Kohen, and the Kohen figures out, evaluates the value of everything he owns. By other hekdeshes, you don't have that concept. You don't have that concept that the Kohen goes and figures out, well, how much does the guy have in valuables and take only that and leave the rest. No, if a person makes a regular neder to Hekdish and says that he's going to give Hekdish a mona or what have you, and he doesn't have it, not only they'll take everything he has, but he's still going to owe the rest. And eventually, if he gets money, he's going to have to pay that also.
So there's no limit.
So we don't, right. So there's no, so, yeah. So mahushi sadhu. So the question is, do we do this kind of siddur? Again, when it comes to taking away things from him to pay it off, do we leave him as mito, makat, et cetera, the stuff that we talked about? So we have a machlokas about it. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Mishmei de Bar Pada. Rabbi Yaakov says as follows in the name of Bar Pada, one of the early Amoraim. Rabbi Yirmiyah Mishmei de Ilfa, and Rabbi Yirmiyah said the same thing in the name of Ilfa. Amri, they both say kavachomer balchov. They say you can make a kavachomer based on the din by a balchov.
From the balchov to the
balchov to hekdesh.
So we're asking here if it goes from.
We're asking like this. Given that by Erchin you are Masadrin, by balchov do you or not? Based on what they're going to say, the fact that they're going to use in their kavachoim over here, they're going to use a balchov to say that a balchov is not masader. Well, then we can see the answer. Obviously, we don't learn the gzeder shava from Erchin. We don't learn
mechamim.
That we have to figure out. Right. Or ma balchov shemachzirin ein masadrin. Ma doch a balchov who is obligated to return the thing every night ein masadrin. Nevertheless, though we are not, we don't do masadrin the balchov. We don't spare anything. So therefore, then so far that answers the question. We were asking whether we learned from Erchin or not. Obviously, according to this, we don't. Hektish, Shein Machzirin. So when it comes to Hektish, when you're not even Hektish, if Hektish takes away something from him, they're not obligated to return it every evening to him, even if they took something that he needs at night or whatever. Ein Adin Shein Masadrin. How much more Kavachomer that you wouldn't be Masadrin? Now, Tosfos points out, so what about Erchin? The difference is, Tosfos points out, Ein Machzirin would mean that if they take a mashkin, they're not obligated to return it at night. Right. So again, this gets into the question, again, when we talked in the Mishnah about taking a mashkin, was it... Well, so again, it gets into the question of whether the whole issue we're talking about is whether we're talking about two different things, whether our Mishnah that mentioned the Dinim of Machzirin is part of the Dinim of Masadrin or not. Again, according to Rashi, it's all related. You take something, you're obligated to return it every night, and along with that, Masadrin, you're obligated to make sure that he has what to live with. According to Tosfos, these are two different things. Anyway, yeah, when we say that Hektish doesn't return, what we mean is they're not obligated. If they take a pillow or what have you from him, they're not obligated to return it at night. Now, so Tosfos points out, Erchin is a different case. Erchin, there's a lot of kulis in it. Erchin, first of all, only apply to people. There's no such thing as saying, for example, the erich of an animal, as opposed to regular donations to Hektish. You can donate an animal or its value or what have you. It only applies to Jews. If a goy says, I'm going to pay an erich, nothing happens. It doesn't apply to a tomb de mandroginus or a baby less than a month old, etc., whereas Hektish is more stringent and Hektish can be chal on anything. Yeah, it's more generalized. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so they're making that kavachomer, therefore, and saying that, and therefore we see from the premise of their kavachomer that obviously they hold the baal chayv is not, we're not obligated to misadrin the baal chayv. So again, it would mean if we look at it in terms of our Mishnah, like Rashi does, it would mean the halacha is like a Rishim and Gamliel in our Mishnah. Ein Masadrin, you sell the thing after 30 days. If we go like Tosfos, it's not related to the issue in our Mishnah, but rather it's related to the Braisa that we discussed yesterday about Masadrin and Baal Chayv, and we would be saying they don't hold it that. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, no, neder be'erkech hatziv, no. As a matter of fact, if the person does say that I'm going to give money to Hektish outside of an erech, since the Torah calls an erech, since the Torah uses the word for it neder be'erkecha, a neder at your erech, then therefore that creates a hekish between a neder and an erech, which therefore Rabbi Yochanan says no, ma erech and misadrin, not hekish misadrin. No, not like they're saying that we learn by this kavachomer from Baal Chayv that you don't. Fine, kavachomer all very nice and good, but we have a pasuk that overrides that and says that an erech has to be like a neder, rather than a neder has to be like an erech. An erech is a given that misadrin, because the pasuk says v'imachu. Therefore, of necessity, by hekish it also has to be that way. So yes, if the person said mona olai that I promised to give him money to Hektish, and he doesn't have enough money, Rabbi Yochanan would say you do the same kind of misadrin. They take, they leave him his basic necessities and take the rest. Okay.
And that's because we apply to Hektish because what?
We apply to Hektish because of this Hektish. because of the hekesh. But that still leaves out, that still presumably leaves out Baal Chayv. There's nothing, even Rabbi Yochanan doesn't have anything to say one way about it, one way or the other about a Baal Chayv.
And that's right.
Yeah, exactly.
So why does he compare it to Baal
Chayv? He's not. He's saying, forget about your Kavah Chaymer from Baal Chayv. You have a Pasuk that tells you have a Hekesh, and the Pasuk that tells you differently. The Idach, so what would Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yumi answer to that? What are they going to do with Rabbi Yochanan and Hekesh? The answer is Ahula Nidin B'Kavodre Hudasa. They use that to teach us a different game. Let's say, for example, when it comes to an
Erech, they
say that the Hekesh teaches us a different din.
Right.
That, like this. Let's say, for example, a person were to say, we talked yesterday, you say my Erech or the Erech of Pliny that I'm obligating myself in, then you look up in Parshas B'chukotai and you pay that Erech. Now, what happens if a person, for example, were to say the Erech of my hand or the Erech of my foot or the Erech of my head? What's the din? Is there an Erech or not? And what about the related thing? What if instead of Erech he says Dmei, which is regular Hekdesh? He says the Dmei, the value of my hand or foot or head or whatnot you or what have you goes to Hekdesh. Then it depends. So Rashi says it depends basically whether it's an Eva Shanashama Tsluyaboy or not. Is it something that's necessary for the person's life or not? His head, for example, is. Therefore, a person says, for example, the Erech of my head, then he owes his entire Erech. And if he says the Dumim of his head, also he owes the entire Erech. His heart, the same thing, his liver, etc. But for example, if he were to say the Dumim versus the Erech of his arm, if it comes to Erech, then the arm has no Erech. The answer is he owes nothing. If it comes to Dumim, what we have to do is, we would have to figure out, Rashi says, based on the Gemara over there in Erechin, we would have to figure out, if he were being sold as an Eved, how much would he be worth with the arm versus without it? And that difference is what's paid to Hekesh. We need this Hekesh between Erechin and Nedarim to teach us this concept of Eber Shana Shama Tluyaboy, to tell us that if you were to say Erech or Dumim of my head or my heart or what have you, that you should have to pay the whole thing. We wouldn't know that without the Hekesh, they argue. My Erchin Nidin Mekvoidoi, a Hekesh Nidin Mekvoidoi. So just as when it comes to Erchin, you judge the thing according to its covered, meaning according to its importance to the body, and therefore if it's the head or some other vital organ, then you owe the entire Erech. Af Hekesh Nidin Mekvoidoi, the same thing. When you're just saying a regular neder to Hekesh, Domai Alai, for example, same rules apply. So they say that's what you need the Hekesh for.
Okay.
So not to teach us this concept that by Erchin you're Mesadrin and therefore by Nedarim you're Mesadrin also, but rather to tell us that the rules about saying the Erech or the Dumim of my head or my heart are the same. There's a different Girsa. Rabbi Hananel has a Girsa, not Kvodoy, but Kvedoy, meaning his liver, meaning that whatever vital organ it is, we treat it like a liver, which is vital for life. Same idea, though, basically. Tosfos points out there is actually a little bit of a difference. When we say that we figure out how much the person is worth with and without the hand, actually, what we do is it's not literally we consider how much he'd be worth if he was being sold as a slave and he was literally missing his hand, because then he'd be worth a lot less. What we do is imagine he's being sold as a slave, his body is intact. But let's say, for example, the deal is that you, the new buyer, have no right to anything that he does with his left hand, only to what he does with his right hand, let's say. The left hand is reserved for his former master. That's a much smaller difference in price. That's the amount that you pay. Okay. Fine. Okay. Next, going back to Baal. So then we have two different possibilities what we can learn with the Hekesh. Either that we make the Hekesh to say that just like you're Masader by one, you're Masader by the other, or we say that you use the Hekesh to say that the name of Eva Shana Shama Tloyabai.
So
that comes out the two different possibilities, whether Masader by Hekesh or not.
Ruin Ben Shama means what?
It means whether if you say the Erech or the Domim of my head, for example. Tosfos Tosfos discusses over here. I mean, if you have a hekesh, shouldn't the hekesh be across the board? Why are Rav Yaakov and Rav Yirmi applying that at all? So arguing that it only goes halfway. They say because after all, since you have a kavachomer against it, then therefore they hold that you can limit the hekesh to only certain things. Okay. Whereas Rav Yochanan would hold it goes across the board. Fine. Fine. Next, we have to ask then. Fine. Given that we've established that by erchin you're definitely masader, we know that the pasuk says v'imachu me'erchecha. Why shouldn't you use a kavachomer to say that by a bachov you should as well? Uma erchin she'en machzirin masadrin. Madoch by erchin, where again, if they take something, for example, if they take something that he needs on a daily basis, they're not obligated to. Hekdesh is not obligated to return it. And yet, we said that masadrin. When it comes to a Baal Chayv, where every day you have to return the object that you took as a mashkin, ain't a dinsha masadrin. How much more so you should be? How much more so you should be masadir? Marsha talks about a bit over here. The question is really, he says only according to the Yech.
Why would you say it more by the Baal Chayv?
Because you should make a kavachomer. That's the kavachomer that we're saying. That
based on the difference between
machzirin and
hekdesh. I understand,
but it's easier than
hekdesh. But why from echin? I understand why it applies to baal chayv.
Well, that's what we're arguing. That's what we're arguing. In other words, so that's the logic. In other words, again, Tosfos comes.
That's the question.
No, because Tosfos comes in over here again and says that there's a difference between again. Tosfos holds that we're talking two different issues over here. Masadrin means when we're foreclosing and saying, forget about it, you haven't paid, we're taking everything you have, then masadrin.
Yeah.
The stage that we're talking about, machzirin, is an earlier stage of the process.
Okay.
When you're taking a mashkin.
Okay, fine.
Well, at that point, we don't do masadrin at that point. Masadrin only comes into play when you're actually taking away everything in order to pay off the debt once and for all.
Okay.
Then on the face of it, if it was erchin, you should still argue, Lakhorda, that if the gizbo took a mashkin from him to force him to pay up, then maybe this gizbo should have to return it to him every day. And we're saying that not. Therefore, we should be able to make the kavachomer. If by an earlier stage of the process by erchin, you're not obligated to machzirin, and yet at the end stage, masadrin, so by Bachoy, we're in an earlier stage in the process, machzirin, how much more so that at the end stage, masadrin?
Not necessarily.
Why not?
You could say by the end stage, we don't want to go so far because it's the end stage.
But that's the point. No. One second. So okay, but if by erchin we're masadrin, why? Then
because it's the earliest stage we can be masadrin. Who
says masadrin? Again, masadrin means the end stage. According to Tosfos, that's what I'm saying. According to Tosfos,
okay.
Masadrin means the end stage.
Right.
Means the end stage, and we're saying that by erchin you're going to do that. However, at an earlier,
and also the end stage,
only at the end stage, at an earlier stage of the. In other words, let's walk through the process when it comes to erchin. The person has declared, I'm going to pay a certain erech. He hasn't paid it up. So the first step, at some point in the process, the gizbo will come and take a mashkin from him to force him to pay up. We're saying, even if he took his pillow, for example, he's not obligated to return it to him every night.
Right.
However, time passes. The guy hasn't come to pay up and get his pillow back. So at that point, we're saying, forget about it. We're just going to take everything you have, figure out the value of it, and see if that's enough to pay off the erech, or at least the sell out of it or whatever. Then we're going to be masadir. And we're saying by erchin you're obligated to do that. Now, by Baal Chayv, same kind of thing. He starts out by taking a mashkin. Mm-hmm. At some point in the process, he takes a mashkin to force the guy to pay up. Mm-hmm. He's obligated to return that mashkin every night or every day, as the case may be. Later on, we're arguing, according to Rabbi Yaakov and according to Rabbi Yirmiya, and maybe according to Rabbi Yochanan, we're saying that when it comes to the end stage, though, when it comes to taking everything that he has, ain't masadrin. We're not going to leave him anything. We're not going to leave him his beds, his mattresses, his whatever. We're going to take everything he's got and use it to pay off the debt. What? It shouldn't be any stronger than erchin. That's the kavachomer.
We should compare both stages the same way.
Yeah. If erchin, even though you don't have to be machzir, you still have to be masadrin in the last stage. So by Baal Chayv, well, you have to be master. We know you have to be master. Torah says so. How much more so than masadrin? The answer is Omar Kravi imachu me'erkecha hu v'loy Baal Chayv. Yes, but the word hu by the erchin, besides that we learned before that the word hu teaches us to leave him his basic necessities, it's also a miut. If he is poor from his erech, implying hu v'loy Baal Chayv, implying only he only the one who said that I'm going to pay an erech and doesn't have the money to pay it, not a bachoy. Okay, so it's a miyut in the pasuk.
Well, we could apply it the same way.
No, in other words, that miyut comes to take away from the bachoy to tell us, not like the kabbalchaimer.
Right.
The idach, what would the other opinion answer? Now, here's where we say, which other opinion? According to Rashi, the other opinion means the Tanakama of our Mishnah, because again, according to Rashi, there's no two different issues in Machzirin and Masadrin. According to Rashi, it's all the same thing. According to Tosfos, these are two different things. So Rashi would learn that the idach over here is the Tanakama of our Mishnah. Tosfos would have to learn that it means the Braisa that we learned yesterday that said Masadrin the Balchot.
Why is that?
Because they would say that in the Mishnah everybody agrees that the Mishnah is not talking about the Sadrin. Everybody would agree in the Mishnah that a Sadrin, Tosfos would say. So we can't say that the Idach, we can't say the other opinion. It can't mean anybody in the Mishnah. It can't mean anybody in the Mishnah. Necessity. It means the Braisa that we quoted yesterday. Okay. So the Idach. So what would that opinion answer? How would they learn that Masadrin Labachoy? They would answer, "Hi, ad shehev makose mitchilas avad soifei." They say, "No, the word who comes to teach us a different din. The person has to be, when it comes to erchin, in order for us to say that he can get away with paying one seller or what have you, would have to be he was poor from beginning to end, from when he made the neder, the erch, until we actually come to foreclose on him and take what he has. He has to have been poor the entire time. Not, for example, when he said the erech he was rich and later on he became poor. Not the other way around.
Then we would take
what he has now and we would make him owe the rest for later.
Why should we make a difference when he's rich?
If he was rich at any one point, and Tosis points out, according to the Yehuda in Erchin, even if he started out poor, then in the middle he became rich, and by the time we come to collect from him he's poor again, nevertheless, we would still say that din does not apply. The din of Bimacho Me'er Kafa only applies if he was poor from beginning to end.
Who meaning from beginning to end.
I'll direct like the Gemara says in Megillah, for example, that Achashverosh, who Achashverosh, means who Berushim is Chilas Avad Tzorki. He was the same Rasha from beginning to end. Yeah. So who means from the same from beginning to end. So they would say that's what the who means. It's not a miyuk to say it applies only by erchin, not by balchayv. It means that nerech himself, the orech himself, the one who declared the erech, has to be poor from beginning to end. Okay. Fine. So there we have the sources of the two different opinions where we would say whether a balchayv, whether we are masader or not masader by balchayv. Either we're mamayit that he doesn't because of who, or we say that we use the kal v'chomer that we just said. Okay. Fine. Let's try another kal v'chomer. V'yachziru behektish kal v'chomer v'alchoy. We took it as a given before that when hektish takes away something from him as a mashkut, they're not obligated to return it every night. Why not? Let's make a kal v'chomer and say that he should. Where again, at the end stage of the process, we're not masadrin, according to one opinion anyway, and yet even that opinion agrees that masadrin, we have to return him his pillow every night. Hektish masadrin, by hektish, where at least by erchin, we know that masadrin, because the pasuk says so, einadin shemachzirin, shouldn't we make a kavachomer and say that for sure they should have to return it every night? The answer is no. Omakra, you can't say that because the pasuk says, the pasuk says, why do you have to return him his sleepwear, his pajamas, for example, every night, in order that he should be able to sleep in his clothing and he will bless you? Yotze hektish, shein tzarech bracha, which comes to exclude hektish. The Eibush doesn't need our brachas. So you might ask back, what do you mean? The Eibush doesn't need our brachas. Below, what do you mean? We don't need Eibush. We have a mitzvah to bench the Eibush after we eat. The Eibush does need our brachas. Yeah, like the Baal Shem just said, that's a kodesh, you're chill, you're chill. Yeah. Ella Amakra, no, you can't say.
He likes them.
Yeah, well, okay, so to speak, the Eibush wants them. So, Ella Amakra, Lachati Yitzdaka. No, rather we can learn it from a different place. The pasuk continues that he'll bless you. The pasuk continues, for you will be considered tzedaka. Misha tzarech tzedaka. That means that this din of machzirin only applies to a regular person who needs tzedaka, who needs favor from the Eibishter, and therefore he needs to do tzedaka for other people. Yotze hektish, shein tzarech tzedaka, as opposed to hektish doesn't need that.
Well, they need tzedakah, don't they?
You give hektish tzedakah, but they don't need tzedakah in the sense that the Eibishter is the source of all tzedakah. He doesn't need our tzedakah, so to speak. L'cha Hashem tzedakah, you have tzedakah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So therefore, that breaks up that kavachayim. So the Gemara tells a story now. Ashkecha is an interesting piece of Agata.
So what do we stand on?
Well, so far we stand as machlokas. But wait, now we're going to see if we can come to a conclusion about it. Ashkecha Rabba Barabur Eliyahu Dekoy Bebetakvaras Shal Evi Kechavim. One time, Rabba Barabur, one of Amoraim, met Eliyahu Anavi standing in a Goyish cemetery. Omalei, and he asks him, Maushi Sadru Balchoy. What is the din? Are we Masadru Balchoy or not? What's the bottom line on this machlokas?
That's what he's talking in a Goyisha cemetery.
Why he was in the Goyisha cemetery, we'll talk on Amud Beis. But yeah,
what is the?
Well, wait. But right now, let's take the story as written, and then we'll get into the details of it afterwards. Okay. So he starts by asking him, Maushi Sadr al Balchay, Amalei, and Eliyahu answers him, Gama Micha Micha Me'erchin. We learn the Gzeder Shabbat Micha Micha that we talked about at the top of the Amud from Erchin. Gaba Erchin Ksivi Machu Me'erchecha. Gaba Balchay Ksivi Chiyama Chachicha. Now. Does that mean that Eliyahu has, first of all, does that mean that Eliyahu has in fact decided in favor of that? And second of all, if yes, does it mean the halacha is like him? Ah. So, first of all, okay, so most Rishonim say, based on this, that indeed that must be the halacha. Given that Eliyahu Anavi said so, I turtle over Shemayimi, but one thing is, so the Chassam Sofer, for example, talks about it, there's a difference whether Eliyahu comes down to earth as an neshama only, or as an neshama in a guf. And here he was in a goof, because we'll see on Amud Beis that Rabba Barabur asked him, what are you doing standing in a Goyish cemetery? Aren't you a Kohen? Obviously, he must have been in a body. If he was just in a Shama, there wouldn't be room for any such question.
If he was a Kohen, how could he be in a body in a Goyish
cemetery? That's what we have to figure out on Amud Beis. We'll talk about it. Wait. But the point is, there wouldn't be room for the question in the first place if he wasn't in a body.
We assume.
When he comes in a body, the Chassam Sofer says, he's like any Talmud Chacham. We can accept halacha from him. Sure. I mean, he had smicha. He was a Rosh Beis Din of his time. No reason we shouldn't accept halacha from him any less than from anybody else.
Okay.
So on that basis, most of the Rishonim say indeed that must be the halacha. On the other hand, Tosfos discusses over here at some length that no, Rabbi Natan says that no, ain't the sad in the Baal Kov. What about what Eliyahu is saying? So first of all, Tosfos says the girsa over here is not necessarily that he's asking Mahu, do all we Masadr Balchoy or not, but rather he's asking him Minayim. This opinion that says that Masadr and the Balchoy, where do they get it from? We mentioned before we may have a Gzeira Shava, this, that, the other. So he's asking, what's the bottom line? That opinion, where does he get it? Not challenging, but just asking. The bottom line, that according to that opinion, where do they get it from? And he answers him, Micha Micha Me'erchin. That's not to say necessarily, though, Tosfos says, that means that the halacha is meant to follow that opinion. It's just that, might be telling him, you should know, according to that opinion, that is where they learn it from this Gzeira Shava. Doesn't mean the halacha has to be established like that. And in fact, Tosfos said that.
Why didn't ask him directly what's the halacha?
According to Tosfos, because Eliyahu Anavi has no business asking halacha.
If he was in a group.
Tosfos apparently doesn't hold of that distinction. Anyway, Tosfos says that even if you say like the girsa that we have, Mahushi Sadru, but you see, Eliyahu is not answering him in so many words, yes, Misadrin. All he's telling him is, Gama Micha Micha Me'erchin, you should know that Gzeira Shava exists. Again, does that necessarily mean Eliyahu is telling him this is the halacha? No, Eliyahu might just be telling him, that Gzeira Shava exists. Do with it what you will. Kind of. Not necessarily, because you have to have learned Gzeira Shava from your rebbein. So not necessarily. Then Tosfos says, again, the fact of the matter is, most Rishonim, Paskin, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that yes, Misadr and the Baal Chayv, Rebbe Natan is a Das Yachid, and he is brought in Shulchan Aruch as Yesh Mishoimer, but the mainstream halacha is that yes, Misadr and the Baal Chayv. Onward. Then Rabbi Barabu asked him another question. Minayin la'orum shalo yitran. How do we know that when a person is undressed, he's not allowed to take truma? Now, the issue isn't really so much taking truma. The issue really is saying the bracha. Because you have to take
truma undressed?
Because you'd have to say a bracha. You have to say a bracha.
So why do we cite the case of a truma?
Any bracha. Right. So the reason is, Tosfos says, because you have a Mishnah that mentions five, Rashi mentions it also, there's a Mishnah in the Sefer Terumah that says there's five types of people who cannot take Terumah. One of them is a person who's undressed. So we know there is the din that you're not allowed to say any bracha is undressed, but that's an explicit Mishnah that says it in connection with Terumah. So therefore he used that as a basis for his question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he asked, where's the source for that? So Eliyahu answers him, Because the pasuk says that Hashem shouldn't see among you any matter of erva.
Yeah.
The pasuk continues, then he'll turn away from you, implying that when there's erva, then there's no kedusha over there, so it's not an appropriate place to be making a bracha. Amalei, now Rabba Bar Avuha asked him, lav kohen huma.
Erva doesn't necessarily mean...
Erva means parts of the body that are supposed to be covered and are not.
It can also mean erva in the sense of arayos.
It can mean lots of different things, sure, of course. I mean, but then the one meaning of it is pashut erva.
Pashut.
Parts of the body that should be covered and are not. Yeah. Amalei, for now Rabba Bar Avuha asked him, lav kohen huma. Aren't you a Kohen? Now, how did he come to be a Kohen? Rashi says, because Pinchas is Eliyahu.
Right.
So if Pinchas is a Kohen, therefore Eliyahu is. Tosfos discusses over here at some length and brings from Medrashim that actually it's not really so simple. There's a Medrash that mentions that it's in Seder Eliyahu Rabbah, actually, where the Chachamim one time were arguing what Shevet is Eliyahu from. There's a couple of different opinions. One of them is actually they mention that in the course of the conversation that Eliyahu himself shows up and says, you should know I'm descended from Rachel,
so,
meaning either from Yosef or Binyamin. So actually, there's
from who?
Kohen is from Levi, who's the son of Leah. Yeah. So there's three different opinions about it. One is that Eliyahu is from Shevet Binyamin.
Right.
Another is that he's from Shevet Gad.
Right.
The one that he says is from Shevet Binyamin is based on a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that mentions Eliyah as one of the descendants of Binyamin. So we identify him with Eliyahu Navi. The one that says he's from Gad is because he's Miteshavei Gilad. He's from the inhabitants of Gilad. Gilad is an Eber. There's three different opinions. Wait. There's three different opinions on the subject. That's what I'm saying. One is from Yisbin Yamin. One is from God because he's Miteshavei Gilad. Gilad is Evra Yarden, where Reuven, God, and Chatzim and Asher live. And the third is that he's a Kohen, which is what our Gemara is going according to. So, aren't you a Kohen? My time a Kohen, my Abba Besakwaris. Why are you standing in a cemetery? Amalei, so Eliyahu answers.
Is it related to the halachic question, or it's just
no. It has a relation. Let's talk a little more in the story, and then we'll talk about the details of what various mepharshim say on that. Amalei, so Eliyahu tells him, "Lemasni mar taharis. Don't you learn? Haven't you learned the dinim of taharis?" D'tanya, we learn in fact in a braisa, Rav Shimon Yechoyim, Kivrei and Shal Ovdik Chavim, Ein Matamin.
That's what he answers.
Eliyahu says, I'm able to stand over here because the Kvarim of Goyim are not Matamin. You have three kinds of Tumas Nes, as we know.
It has to be Matamin to allow a Kohen to be there.
If a Kohen, if it's not Matamin, a Kohen can be there. There's three kinds of Tumah from a dead body, right? There's Maga, Masa, and Oil. Rav Shimon Yechoyim is saying that Kivrei Ovdik Chavim are not Matame, meaning there's no Tumas Oil over there. There is actually one of the Rishonim, the Sefer Yireim, wants to say that even Mago Masa doesn't apply to Goyish body. Nobody else holds that way, but there is a Machlok that's Rishonim whether indeed the Halacha is like Rav Shimon Yechoyim. Again, that gets into the question, can we paskin like these three statements that Eliyahu is saying over here? If we say that we can, sure, he's saying that I hold like Rav Shimon, then the Halacha must be like him.
Maga Masa and Oil.
On the other hand, if we say that just because Eliyahu is saying it doesn't necessarily make it the halacha, either because he's not a human being, he's a malach, or because he himself is maybe not saying it as technical halacha, he's sort of like pushing him off, then the halacha is not necessarily like Rav Shimon. Again, Tosfos takes the view that not, the halacha is in fact not like Rav Shimon, also based on a mission and all those or whatever. On the other hand, so Goyish body would be Metameh Ba'oil as well. On the other hand, which would mean a Kohen can't be in a Goyish cemetery, he can't be in a hospital where there are Goyish bodies in the morgue or whatever.
For the same reason,
oil. Whereas according to Rav Shimon, it would be allowed. Again, you have Tosfos holds the halacha is not like Rav Shimon. The Rambam holds the halacha is like Rav Shimon. In Shulchan Aruch also, you have both opinions are brought. It says better to be machmir, but there are respectable opinions to be made.
Didn't you tell me once that the reason why the goyim are allowed to walk on harabais is that they're not considered they cannot tame?
Midaraisa, I never said that goyim are allowed to walk on harabais. I thought goyim are not supposed to go past the chel. The fact that goyim
nowadays,
I'm talking about, even after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, it still has the same kedusha. The fact that goyim are walking around on the harabais is a bush of a cherpa. It's not allowed up yalacha.
It's not allowed up yalacha.
No. Midrabanan, they're considered zavim anyway. Midrabanan, they're not supposed to be going past the chel. But unfortunately, you know, yeah. Okay, anyway. There is, by the way, since you mentioned Inahana bias, I did once read a cute thing. You know that among the gates of the Harabayas, or the famous Shara Rachamim, the gates on the eastern side of the Harabayas, which at that point is also the eastern wall of Yerushalayim. Those gates have been closed up for hundreds of years, but whatever, they used to be open. Supposedly, at some point, a tradition developed that Eliyahu HaNavi, when he comes to announce that Mashiach is going to come from that direction. The Stamach is in the direction of Harazesim, I don't know. So the Muslims put a cemetery over there, figuring that if Jewish tradition is that Eliyahu is a Kohen, then he can't go through there. They didn't know this Gemara. They didn't realize that Eliyahu HaNavi holds like Reb Shimon, and therefore he won't have a problem with it. Okay, onwards. So, Kivrein shall overcome in retirement, Shenema, because the Pasuk says, V'aten tzoni tzoni marisi Adam atem, the Ebishter says to the Jewish people, you are my sheep, the sheep of that I shepherd, you are Adam, implying Atem Kurim Adam, Vein Ebikachavim Kurim Adam. Only you Jewish people are called Adam, the rest of the nations are not called Adam. Okay, what does that mean? You have a lot of discussion about that. Also, for the Tosfos points out elsewhere, by the way, that Adam means only the Jewish people, but Ha-Adam means everyone, means Goyim as well. What is the deeper meaning of it? There's a lot of different explanations. There's a lot of different explanations about it. One of them is that one of them is exactly that. The difference between human beings and all other lower levels of existence is the difference between a yid and a goy is that kind of unbridgeable gap, kind of.
Beruchnius,
yeah. But in Chassidus, it even talks about this someplace in one of the Maimonides of the Rebbe Rashab, where it says that by rights, Goyim should have been walking on all fours like animals, but then there wouldn't be Bechira Chavshis. Then everybody would see the difference between a Jew and a Goy, and nobody would ever think to act like a Goy, and therefore the Eibush had to make them outwardly the same as us. But it talks about the vote from the Mizrachi Magid that the deeper idea behind this is that there's an aleph in Adam, the aleph representing aluf v'shal olam, the ruchnius in a person that's the only we Jewish people have, the nations of the world don't. Okay, anyway.
Who says that?
The Mizrachi Magid says that. Anyway, the bottom line is therefore if the Torah says Adam ki yamus ba'il, that tumas oil applies only to the body of an Adam, then it doesn't apply to Goyim. So therefore, I can be a Kohen and I can still be standing in the cemetery. So Eliyahu is asking Rabbi Bar Abua, Haitochen, you didn't know that you're asking me the question. Omale, so Rabbi Bar Abua answers him, Ba'abole Matzina v'shita Matzina. I don't even fully know my way around the four Sedarim. You expect me to know six, all six? What four Sedarim? Rashi says, Moed Noshim Nizikim and Kodshim. Moed Noshim and Nizikim, those are the ones that have Gemara Babli on them as well. Those are the ones that are noyig bizman ha-golos. Moyed noshim and nizikin, very obviously. Kodshim is not noyig bizman ha-golos, but kolo oisik v'teras oyla, ki le'ikriv oyla, learning the genome of korbanos is the equivalent of bringing them, and therefore kodshim is considered to be applicable nowadays also. But zroyim is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael. Taras is only applicable when we're careful in terms of a tara, when we have the parah druma, etc., which we don't. So he's saying, I don't even fully know the force of him, and you expect me to know something from Seder Taras.
Because we're in golos?
No, meaning because he's going to say, because I'm poor, I don't have enough time to learn. But Tosfos says, it's not that he doesn't know the Mishnayos. The Amoraim knew all the Mishnayos inside and out. They didn't know the Braises. This that we quoted was a Braises. Yeah. Marsha, by the way, has a different explanation. He says what Rabbi Bar Avoha is saying is, I don't even know a din from the fourth Seder of Shas, namely Seder Nizikin, because I started by asking, Minayin Shem Esadr in the Baal Chayv. I started by asking Ma'ur Shem Esadr in the Baal Chayv, and you expect me to know a detail from Seder Taharas, which is the sixth Seder, if I haven't even gotten through the fourth. How do you expect it? Okay. Amalei, so Eliyahu asked him, Vamai, why not?
Amalei Dechikim,
why Taka, aren't you familiar with all six Zorim and all their devices and everything? Amalei, said Rabbi Bar Avoha, said, Dechikili Milsa. I have a very hard time of it, I'm poor. So, Dchikli Milsa literally means that the matter is pressed for me, meaning I have troubles with Parnasa. Dabri v'aylu l'Gan Eden. So Eliyahu took him along and brought him to Gan Eden. Amale, he says to him, Pshot glimcha, stretch out your garment, svi shoko mehanach tarpi, and gather and take some of these leaves. Leaves that have fallen, off the trees in Gan Eden. Sopashokal, so he gathered a bunch of them and put them, and then took them. Kiyavan Nafik, as he's leaving Gan Eden, Shama Dekoma, he heard a voice saying, Man ka'ochel alme kirava baravua. Who is that who's eating up his reward in Olam Haba like Dava Baravua? In other words, if he takes these leaves,
no,
he's taking away he's going to be taking away some of his reward in Gan Eden.
Right.
Nafat Shadanu, so he threw them out and then threw them back. Filohochi Isilaglime, but he still brought his glimmer, his garment back. Sochat Glimmerecha, and from the leaves that was absorbed such a beautiful smell into the glimmer that it was now worth a lot of money. It has this otherworldly the smell of Gan Eden in it. Zavne b'tshrei sa'alpa dinu. He sold it for 12,000 dinar.
Wow.
However, paldinu l'chasna vase. However, he gave all that money to his sons-in-law because he didn't want to have hana from it, given what he had heard.
I don't know, already smell.
But that's not that. That's an intangible hana. We're talking about a hana as far as money.
Right.
That he should have a monetary hana from it is taka not appropriate because then it'll be taken away from his share in Gan Eden. So therefore, he gave it to his sons-in-law, and that's the point. Mele, he gave it to his sons, Brakara Davua, then at least he's having a certain hana from it. They also gaushen him after he dies, etc. He gives it to his sons-in-law. It's like it's further out there. It's not. It has nothing to do with him anymore. Okay, so what's the... So among the many details
is
behind...
Is that over that we should give our money?
Right. Well, no, it means that if you like in the story, for example, of Rav Chanina ben Dosa, if you're given a table leg min hashamayim, then don't take it. Leave it for Gan Eden. So the Torah Chaim actually says the point of mentioning the leaves that fell off the trees is it's a derech moshel to say that even like the leaves that fell off the trees in Gan Eden have such a power in them. Yeah. Anyway.
And that's also the ruchnius, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay, so some details. I mean, we don't have too much time to talk about all the possible details in the story, but some of them are. So the Maharal talks about what's the connection between this that he's standing in the cemetery and these questions that he's asking him. He explained basically these questions, the two questions about the Sadr and the Baal Chayv, and can a person who's not wearing clothing take Terumah, both of them have to do with the problem of being poor. A Baal Chayv doesn't have any money, and an Aram doesn't have any clothes. And therefore, so that leads into, so why is Eliyahu standing in the cemetery? One thing he says is Parshat in order to lead up to, that the Rav Baravur will explain that he's poor, and therefore he can take him to Gan Eden and give him a chance to get his car.
Right.
Second of all, also Maharal says what he wants to hint to him is, don't think that wealth is how much money a person has. Look at all these goyim who are buried over here. They may have been rich in their life, but now they're not even considered Adam. They're not even considered human enough to be metamemes. So you see, that's not the important thing in life. There's that.
Except when you get tzedakah.
Right. Well, tzedakah. Obviously, when you do mitzvahs, that's different. Yeah. What else is there?
Did Tino say you're poor and you cannot learn Torah?
He didn't have as much time to learn Torah as he wanted to. It's a fair argument. Tosfos talks over here a little bit about if we say that Eliyahu was a kohen. How was he able to revive that the son of the Ben of the Isha Tzarfathis? We know the story that while there was a famine going on in Eretz Yisrael, the Ebeshah tells him to go board with his widow in Tzarfath, and he does. And then afterwards, Tzarfath doesn't mean France. It's a place on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. Anyway. So afterwards, her son becomes very sick and then dies. She blames Eliyahu. Up until now, I was a local tzaddikus. Now you're the local tzaddik and you outshine me, so I look like a rishas compared to you. And Eliyahu goes and davens for the boy and then revives him. Yeah. So how is he? And the pasuk seems to say that he actually physically was on. He laid on top of him, similar to Elisha later with the Ben Ashunamis, and revived him. So if
he was tummy already?
That's the question. If he was dead, then Eliyahu was a Kohen. How is he able to? So Tosfos gives the answer that he knew for sure he's going to be able to revive him, and therefore it's allowed him to touch the Ruach Nefesh. Which gets into a vast discussion among the Achronim. Yeah, what kind of Ruach Nefesh? The kid's already dead.
Right.
Then there's no Ruach Nefesh to talk about. So there's a vast amount of discussion about that, including there's a lot of interesting possibilities. One of them is that maybe, in fact, Taka, the kid wasn't dead. Maybe it's only he was in a deep faint.
Stage close to death,
but not quite. In fact, actually, the Rebbe makes a somewhat similar distinction in the Sicha in Chelek Yudches, where among other things, the Rebbe talks about in brief the difference between that story and the story with Elisha, with the Ben Ashenamis, where the difference is here, Eliyahu just had to daven that his neshama should return to him. There, Elisha had to get him a new neshama. Therefore, it's a difference. So there's that could be a difference. There's other interesting possibilities also. By the way, Tosfos mentions another interesting little tidbit in that this baby Tosfos brings from a medrash, that this baby that he revived, this child that Eliyahu revived, is none other than Mashiach ben Yosef. Okay. Now, as opposed to that, on the other hand, Rabbeinu Bechaye goes the other way. Rabbeinu Bechaye says that this Isha Tzofatis and her son were goyim. Well, we just learned that according to Eliyahu, goyim are not metame ba'oil. As long as he didn't actually physically touch him, then there's no problem. Which gets into a vast discussion also, how you talk, and especially if he's Mashiach and Yosef, how could he be a goy? I saw somebody suggest that maybe afterwards they became gerim, but yeah, obviously there's a lot to talk about over here about this. And it also gets into the question, by the way, of can a koyin do CPR, for example, to revive a person? Okay.
So the goyim are not metamim?
So according to what we're saying over here in the Gemara, Rav Shimon Yochai is saying that a goy is not metamim ba'oyel. Now, b'mago v'masa, again, according to most Rishonim, yes. According to the Sefer Yireyim, not, but he's a Das Yachid.
Right.
But then the question becomes, anyway, is the halacha like Rav Shimon or not? Again, Tosfos says that not. The Rambam says that yes. And in Shulchan Aruch, you have both opinions. Okay. Tana Rabbanim. We learn in a Braisa. Going back to the dinim of Mashkan, the Pasuk says, v'im ish onihu, the Pasuk says, if he's a poor person, lo sishka va'avoytoi, you should not sleep in his avoit, with his avoit. That's right. His avoit means the mashkan. Avoit is another word for mashkan. But it sounds like it means sleep in it means literally, for example, you took a mashkan, a blanket, you would be allowed to sleep with it if he's rich. Ha'asher shachiv. It sounds like if he's rich, then you are allowed to sleep with it. My karma, but what can that mean? How wouldn't that be a problem of riddis? Fine, let's say you don't have to return it to him every day for the other blanket. If you use it, it's ribbon. Yeah. Amar Rav Shesh is hachakama. No, what it means is, v'im ish onihu lo tishka va'avoytei etzlacha. It means you are not allowed to go to sleep with his avoit, with his mashkin still by you. You have to return it to him before nightfall, before shkia. Ha'osher shochi va'avoytei etzlacha. But if he's rich, sure, you're allowed to go to sleep and have it by you because he doesn't need it.
But you're not allowed to sleep on it
or with it or what have you. Yeah. Turn it up on him. Hamal v'es kaveira
ener.
Rashi also brings it on the pasuk, by the way. Yeah. Turn it up on Hamal v'es kaveira. If a person lends money to somebody else, ener ashoy lemashkenoi, he is not allowed to take a mashken from him. The ener chayev lahachzoloi, he is not obligated to return it to him. V'over b'chol hashem es halalu, he's over on all these various histories. For my comma, what is the Braita saying? What do you mean he's not allowed to take a mashken, but he's not obligated to return it to him? But he's over on all. What does that mean? Rav Shesh is Havakama. So Rav Shesh says, obviously there must be a mistake in the Braita. It means like this. Hamal v'es chavera enu ashoy lemashkenai. You lend somebody money, you are not allowed to take a mashken from him, as we learned before. The shliach, either we said, according to Shmuel, even the shliach based in can't, he has to bring it out to you, or we said according to a different Braita, we said the shliach based in is allowed to go in and take it, but you at any rate are not. The im mishkenai, but if you did illegally take a mashken from him, chayav la'achzoloi, nevertheless, you're obligated to return it to him every night or every day, as the case may be. But over b'chol hashem es halalu as sefer. And then when the Braita says you're over on all these things, is referring to that sefer. If you don't return that illegally taken mashkin to him every night, you will still be over on all these mitzvahs of not returning a mashkin in time. Rava says, no, that's not what the Braita means. Hachikama, it means like this. Hamav es chaver einu ashoy l'mashkin, right? If you lend money to somebody, you're not allowed to take a mashkin from him. But if you did take a mashkin from him illegally, then you are obligated to return it to him. However, here is the part that Rava had. When does that apply? Only if he took a mashkin, not at the time of the halvah, but later on. But if he took the mashkin to begin with when he first lent him money,
then
he's not obligated to return it to him. Because when the pasuk says the kisasha bereacha mashas mu'umah, the person owes you something, you're not allowed to come into his house in order to take a mashkin. That's talking about when he already owes it to you from before. When he gives you the mashkin to begin with at the time of the loan, that's not what the pasuk is talking about. Therefore, it's allowed. And in fact, we talked yesterday also. There are rishonim who say that even the other din, which we're going to learn about tomorrow, the din about not taking Caleb Shalit and Baron Echol Nefesh, also doesn't apply in that case. The Bala Mara says that, for example, if he did it to begin with, at the time of the Mashka, at the time of the Halva, rather than later, yeah.
We saw that from where
exactly? We talked about it in connection with the fact that the Mishnah had talked about it in connection, for example, with taking as a Mashkin a plow. If we take the view that a plow is Kalim Chosen by Yechal Nefesh, then how are you allowed to take it? So one answer was that there's a difference whether you took it at the time of the Halva or afterwards. Yeah. Okay. Oh, no, actually, the Bala Mara had said that it's whether he gave it to you voluntarily or not. But aside from that, there's a different machlokes as you're showing him, whether if he gives it to you, no, voluntarily would be even if he gave it to you later on, but voluntarily. Mm-hmm. But if he gave it to you at the time of the mashkin, then we're saying that, yeah, that it doesn't apply. The over b'chol Hashem is halolo aresha. And then Rava says, when the Braita says that you're over on all these various historim, is referring to the resha, that you are not allowed to take a mashkin from him directly. And if you do, then you're over on the issue of taking a mashkin from him. And if it was Caleb Chosen, he has to give it to you. He has to come out and give it to you, yeah. And if it was Caleb Chosen by Nechol Nefesh, then you're over on that as well, etc. By the way, I mean, both dinim are true. It's just how do we understand the braisa? Tony Rav Shizbi kameh de Rava. Rav Shizbi taught a braisa in front of Rava that went like this. We talked yesterday, you have two different psukim that talk about this mitzvah of returning a mashkan. One is in Parshas Mishpatim, one is in Parshas Kisei. One says, Ad boya shemesh tishivenu loy, until the coming of the sun, you should return it to him. Zuksus laila. And he says this means a night garment. Now on the face of it, what it means is that, you should return it to him, and you should return it to him in the morning. It will stay by him at Boya Shemesh until the sun sets, and then you'll take it from him. Which then the obvious question is, what do you need? Why does he need it by night? The whole point is he needs it by day. So over here we're assuming that at Boya Shemesh, right? No, at Boya Shemesh means till sunset. But according to this, it sounds like at Boya Shemesh Shishibenelo, you return it to him so that it's by him until the sun sets. Zuxus Lila, this is a night garment. So, but what does he need in the night garment by day?
Why can't you say Boya Shemesh is come also?
Okay, it's interesting. Well, because first of all, because it's Ad Boya Shemesh until the coming, but actually, the Eben Ezra actually points out in one or two places that the word Boya Shemesh, he says, always means sunset. It always means the sun going down. He says, for example, he gives it as an interesting example. He talks about the pasuk in Yeshaya, it's the beginning of the Torah of Kisavoy, that says, Kumi Ori Kiva Orech. We have a variant of it in the Chodori. Tiba Orech Kumi Ori. We usually think that it means your light has come, so get up, arise. He says, no, that's not what it means. Kumi Ori, get up and shine. Tiba Orech. Previously, your light has been set, has dimmed, has been removed. But now, Uchvod Hashem Alayat Zorach. Now the glory of Hashem will shine on you. Yeah. So Boya Shemesh then means sunset. Yeah. Okay. So Ad Boya Shemesh Tishivenu Lo Zuxus Laila. This refers to a night garment. And Hoshev Toshev Le'Savot Voya Shemesh. And when it says you should return it to him at sunset, Zuxus Yom. This refers to a day garment. Amalei. So Rava asked him, isn't that backwards? The Mama Balel Yolamali or Balel Yobimamali. Mamali. Why does the loiva need the day garment at night and the night garment at day? Amalei Yisnei. So Rav Shizbi asked him, okay, should I delete that braisa from my repertoire of braisas if it's mistaken? Amalei. So Rava tells him, Loi, Hochakama. No, you just have to switch around what the braisa is saying. Ad boya shemesh tishivenu loy zuksus yom shenikna lach b'laila. When it says until the sun setting, you should return it to him, that means a day garment, which you're allowed to keep it by night. So it means you return it to him in the morning. He holds on to it ad boya shemesh until the setting of the sun, and then he gives it to you to hold overnight, and you return it to him the next morning. Hoshev, Toshev, Loyach, Avot, Kvaya Shemesh. And when the other pasuk that says that you should return him the mashkin when the sun is setting, Zuksus Lailash, and Nitan Lachlo Vayem. This means that you hold on to it during the day, and it's a night garment, so you give it to him by Shkia, and he keeps it all night. So therefore, so the Braisa is fine. It just had the two things flipped around. Amar Rav Yechanan. So Rav Yechanan says a din on this. What happens if you took a mashkin from somebody and you returned it to him by day or by night, as the case may be? The malve is allowed to take it away from his children. Now, usually we've learned many times that metalkalin of yisomim are not under a shibud to a balchoy, but this is an exception
because it's a mashkin.
Because it's a mashkin. So Omer of Meir, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braita says, Omer of Meir, v'chim ha'achash ha'mashkin in l'machirin. A Braita says, well, since you're taking it as a mashkin, why are you returning it? And the Gemara interjects, what is your Meir asking? Well, what do you mean, why do you return it? Rachmana ama'adah, the Torah says you got to return it every night or every day, so you got it. Ella, no, the question is rather, ma'achash ma'chzirin, l'machozirin ma'mashkinin. If you're returning it anyway, why are you taking it back as a mashkin? You're just going to have to return it the next day anyway.
And if he said, what?
If you took it, if you have to return it every night,
right,
why are you bothering to take it back the next morning? Once you return it to him at night, just leave it by him. And he continues, shalote shvius meshamat. So the reason what you accomplish by that is that this way shvius won't cancel the loan, and also v'loya also metalplin it's a one of, and also that it won't be considered metalplin that the yorshim yarshin, which then you wouldn't be able to take away from him,
right,
implying time of dehador mashkene, which implies why does that work only if you take it back the next morning? But it sounds like if you never took it back, then you're not allowed to. And here Rabbi Yochanan is saying you gave it to him at night and then he died during the night, you're allowed to take it from his children the next morning. It sounds like, according to this Braita, that no, only if you actually took it away from him and then he died while it was by you, then you can keep it. The answer is, Amar Abad Bamasna, the law of Tarut to come to law. Look, as it is, you have to anyway fix up the wording of the Braita, because as it is, we started by saying Loma Machzirin can't possibly be correct. As long as you're fixing up the braisa anyway, fix it up as follows. Given that you have to return it every night, what's the point of taking the mashkin in the first place? That is, in order that shvius won't cancel it. In other words, the point is, once you took it as a mashkin one time, then that's fine. From that point on, it's considered yours, and therefore you don't have to return it. You have to return it to him because there's a cost, but you don't have to return it to his children. You can keep it even if it's in his rishus. You're entitled to take it back from them
if you do it one time.
If you do, as long as you did it one time. Some rishonim say that even you'll be allowed to go into his house to take it back afterwards, if only the first time, that not. Tosfos points out, by the way, an interesting thing. If that's the case, Taka, why do you bother? Once you took it, once it's Taka, if all you need is one time taking it to make it a mashkin, take it the first time, return it to him the first night so he can sleep in it, and then leave it by him. What's the point? Tosfos says an interesting psychological thing, or two things. One is, first of all, this way the lawyer won't be able to deny it, because every time you're coming and taking it from him. Number two, a psychological thing. When he sees every day that you're coming and return it to him, and every day he has to come and return it to you, after a while he's going to get embarrassed that you're around here. He's going to go and pay off his debt. So therefore, so it accomplishes that. Yeah.